This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. It's your host, Tim Link, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. I am so excited about this show because my super-duper friend is going to be on, and we're going to chat, not only about her latest book, but life in general. Of course, we're talking about Rita Mae Brown. We're going to talk to Rita Mae about her latest book, Feline Fatale. It's the latest in the Mrs. Murphy series, so we'll find out what the gang is up to in the book and all the mysteries going on, and then, of course, talk to Rita Mae about writing and life and everything in general. So super-duper time. Always excited to talk to my friend Rita Mae Brown. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is New York Times bestselling author and part of the Mrs. Murphy's mystery series. It is Rita Mae Brown. Rita Mae, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, we're always excited to have you back, my friend. Obviously, you keep us entertained with all the book and the writings and the mysteries going on, but I always love talking to you in general about life and what's going on without getting too deep into it, but just scratching the surface on everything.
Well, yeah, I can advertise myself as the Sage of Virginia. Oh, God. But it's so good to hear your voice. And this book is so much fun, I got to say. I'm delighted to talk to you about it and you give me time. But I'm sitting here looking at you and I've got it open to page 18. And on the right is one of Michael Galately's fabulous drawings. He's just been a joy. We've worked together for, you know what, 2 decades now. And I'm going to say this wrong. Maybe your wife knows how to say this, because I'll bet you don't either. Louboutin, the red high heels that sell for over $1,000 a piece.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, you're looking at these high heels and this woman walking away from you with really quite good legs. And I thought, Michael, you devil, you really had a good time with that drawing.
It is so bizarre. I know you and I have talked about my telecom days and working for AT&T, and for good or bad, we used to sell phone systems, and they were called the Merlin system, and they had a distinct ring. And I got to the point where I could hear a ring of a phone. This is how sad this is, but I could hear a ring of a phone and know if it was one of my Merlins that was ringing. And so this is the same thing about these shoes. My wife and I catch that because I remember watching a show. I won't mention the name of the show, but watching the show years ago, and it's the first time we saw these red soled shoes, these fancy, you know, beautiful shoes. And so we learned all about them. You're right, I can't pronounce it, but I see them, and it's like, you know, Where's Waldo? And when we're watching a movie or a show, it's
There's no doubt in my mind that the designer, who, of course, has a great career, was cribbing off of Louis XIV because he had red-soled high heels. You know, oh. So you could hear the king clicking all over Versailles or wherever he was. It's amazing the place shoes have, what it means in society and what it means in this book. I mean, I can't say that I've ever concentrated on clothing or that much before, but I just had a ball doing it, and I learned a lot, and I learned that there's nobody ever going to make a drawing of me or have photographs of me because I'm always in my riding boots.
Yeah, I was going to say, as long as you have a good wearing, comfortable riding boot, you're pretty good shape, I would think.
Yeah, I am. And you know, those things, like I am, if you're in boots for hours and hours, you might as well have them made to your foot. Yes, you're going to pay for it, like you're going to pay for these heels, but Oh, you will be so happy. And they last a long time. I think most everybody, it takes a while to learn this. Like when you're young, you really don't. But sometimes, you get in your middle 30s and you realize, my feet hurt. I don't want to live like this anymore.
Well, I tell you, getting on the topic of shoes, when I was growing up, this tells you how old I am, but the Chuck Taylor Converse high tops were the thing. And only time I had a pair that I could wear that was my own was when I made the fifth grade basketball team. We were required to have a white pair, but you can only wear them in the gym. You weren't allowed to wear them out. And so I had a older cousin who would he had a side job, and he would buy a pair, and we were the same size. And after he got tired and wanted a new pair, I would get his hand-me-downs, and I would have the purple or the red or whatever the Converse, Chuck Taylor style. Now, looking back at it after years, you're right. My flat feet would never be able to handle it because those, they're cloth high top shoes, and they have those thick rubber, like Goodyear bottoms. Very uncomfortable, but stylish. But yeah, after all these years, I look at those and think, yeah, I remember those. And yeah, there's no way in the world I could wear a pair of those today. I'm sorry.
Speaking of age, happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be 21 again and again and again. And yeah, things are good. Life's good. And, another trip around the sun. So I am blessed.
Well, I think we all are. But back to shoes. It's one of the things the animals can't really understand in the book. Why are people spending money on shoes? And, Harry, being Harry, is looking for a pair of Timberlands because hers are wearing out, and she hates to spend money. But, I mean, I guess it is funny. If you're walking on 4 feet, you just can't understand what we go through. But we can't understand how well-balanced they are because we're always sort of tottering, whether we know it or not. But it's interesting in this book, the person who wears these shoes is a newscaster who is no longer doing the news. She's in her early 50s, quite good looking, and she's been elected from one of the districts to be a delegate in Virginia. We have a House of Delegates, and then we have our Senate. That's the way our state is divided up. And she's a Republican, and she's not, I would say she's not hard right, but she's fairly right-wing. And because she has... Everybody in the state knows her, of course. She just got in a minute. And so she's in there trying to get things done that sort of agree with party principle and a couple other things, maybe not. But I had so much fun doing the research. I mean, apart from just the clothing. How smart is it for a woman today to be a Republican?
That's sadly a very loaded question. I don't know if I want to answer that. You tell me.
I mean, the Democratic Party is clogged with women. And I'm glad of it. This is hardly a complaint. But you can move better or be recognized quicker in the Republican Party because there aren't a lot of you.
That is very true. And I'll just say I wish there was one female Republican from my state that I would hear less from. I'm just leaving it at that, and I'm moving on from politics.
But, I've started to have an affection for her because I can't believe anybody's that outrageous. I just can't. And then I think, well, we live in odd times. So be it. But what starts this book off, and then, you can ask me whatever you want, but it starts with snow and the hope for spring, but it's just not coming. And a young Democratic delegate, a man who works with one of Harry's best friends, Ned Tucker is her best friend, and Susan Tucker is her real best friend, so to speak, her girl best friend. And this fellow's name is Aiden Harkness. And Aiden, he has the chance to rise. He's attractive. He's saying all the right things, the cultural right things, et cetera, et cetera. And he and the very good-looking lady that was the newscaster, Amanda Field, they just go at one another hammer and tongue down there in front of everyone on the floor. And he calls her a bitch. And, oh, my God, everything blows up. I mean, he just loses his temper. He can't help it. And she walks across in her high heels and slaps him. So that's pretty much what gets the book going. And these two are just at one another. If she says apples, he says bananas, and vice versa. And you begin to realize why it's so difficult to get things done when people get in these postures. Neither one is necessarily a bad person, but both of them have their eye on the news and having a big career. Well, she's ahead of them. I mean, she really knows how to manipulate the media. And I had a lot of fun with that. I did some research. I love to go down to our state house. So it'll be interesting to see how people respond to this tension, for lack of a better word, because I think it's all around us.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Obviously, we talk about research. I mean, I think you do it better than anybody, because it's not a matter of just putting, you know, some characters in there, familiar characters in there, and putting together a, you know, mystery surrounding it. But, you know, you come up with an idea and a topic that's a modern day topic, and then you do the deep dive research. And so the question is, you know, how did you go about, you know, going down to the state house, going down and learning more about the ins and outs of everything to blend this nicely into the book, Feline Fatale?
Well, I'm about an hour and a half, maybe an hour and 45 minutes from the state house, so it's easy to get there. When you walk in that room, it gets you. It truly gets you, you know?
Yeah, because the history behind it, sure. That's right.
Jefferson was in there. I mean, you're where these giants walked. And even more common fact, you wouldn't know our now he's the late Governor Jerry Belial, but that was another giant. And Doug Wilder, who's still alive, the first black elected governor in America, and as far as I know, the only one. I mean, the guy that became the black governor in New York, I think the fellow before him, it was the guy that got caught in all the sex stuff, whose name just escapes me.
Cuomo.
Probably merciful. There's not been another elected one. So this is a very odd state. I mean, we're seen as, you know, the center of the Confederacy and all this kind of stuff, which you, being a Georgian, can understand very well. And yet we're so odd. But then again, so are you, along very different lines. I mean, I have never met a normal Georgian, let's put it that way.
Thank God I wasn't born here. Maybe I was instilled. My Indiana roots maybe helped me out a little bit. It's a different world here, for sure. And like most major cities, you know, the Atlanta metropolitan area is quite diverse compared to the rural areas.
I mean, show me a Georgian that doesn't know how to have a good time. I mean, you just go down there and you sit and somebody's going to come up and start talking to you. And the next thing you know, the two of you are going somewhere. Or you're going to a party. Or you've been invited somewhere. I mean, I just can't believe it. It's so fabulous. Again, I've never, ever had a bad moment in that state. I've had some bad ones in mine, but not yours. But you look around and you see this, and you see that your state house is different than ours. Ours has a certain amount of restraint. I always say living in Virginia is as close to the Cotswolds as you will get, that part of England, because that's really what we are. And there's a certain restraint. So when he loses it and calls this woman a bitch, that just doesn't happen here. With my sort of little opening the door, like, no, it hasn't happened yet, but it will.
Yeah, you know, and I loved when the intro to the book, how you led into all this, because, you know, it is, I would say, you always have something unique to start the book with, but this one seemed to be, like, apropos for the times and really hit you. For me, it hit me in the face a little bit more. And then we got into, you know, what I would determine, you know, what the solving the mystery and everything the felines are doing and all the other wonderful stuff that goes along with it.
Well, while we're on the phone, I will let you know and your readers, this is the first book where I had to have a sensitivity reader. No kidding. I don't know what has happened to the First Amendment, but I think publishing has somewhat forgotten it. But anyway, I have a trans character in here, a trans man who I adore. Totally, I mean, I'm just crazy about him. But he was in the same sorority as Amanda Fields, the woman who's the elected official, which was Delta, Delta, Delta. Of course, I had to use my own sorority. And then he realizes he has to lead a different life. You don't see all that. You just hear about it in bits and pieces as the book goes on. But they were sorority sisters, and now she calls him her sorority brother. And he loves her. I mean, they love one another. They do. But it's interesting because here she is, a Republican. And the far right, of course, is very unhappy with anything trans. And she just flips the bird at all of them, even though she's a Republican. So she's a very unusual character, but it's also a very unusual relationship because of the ways in which they knew one another and are now in another place. And I keep thinking, you know, more and more of us are going to have these experiences. God knows what we'll make of them. I mean, just because somebody's trans, what is that? I mean, they have a distinct personality. Being trans is just a fact of their life, but it changes everything for many people. It changes their responses, rightly or wrongly. And I had, that was interesting to grapple with, because it's not the center of the story, but it's one of the things I most like about Amanda, that she wasn't going to turn her back on her friend. Now, she can weaken about other things, but in terms of turning on him, because he's now a him, never. She would never do it. And I think if you love people, you don't. You just have to accept whether it's difficult or not. It's not my life. It's not yours.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's a matter of, you know, ignorance to a degree, and I don't mean that in a totally negative way. It's just the fact that if you're not educated to that point, if you don't know, if you're not around particular genders or sexualities, then, you know, you have a certain amount of ignorance, and people are afraid of being ignorant. We'll just put it that way. And so, I'm your philosophy. Life is life, love is love, and let's just try to survive it all together.
Well, what's interesting, too, about this character, Lucas is his name, is he's close to the mystery, but he doesn't know it. So he actually becomes endangered. I had some fun with that, too, because he's just blind to it. It would never occur to him, but it doesn't occur to anyone else either until it's too damn late. And I had a certain amount of fun with that, because you're playing with... Have you ever noticed, and I'm sure your listeners have noticed this, that sometimes everybody knows what's going on in somebody's life or somebody's relationship or with their children, and they don't see it because it's right under their nose.
Why do you think that is nowadays? You know, because I always reflect back to my childhood. We may not have known everything that was going on with every family on the block, but we knew every family, and we knew their kids, and we knew... Yeah, we all were in the same, you know, pot together. And now, truthfully, you know, I wave at my neighbors. I know the two closest to me, at least, you know, by name. And that's about as far as it goes.
Well, we have become scattered in ways. This family unit isn't as physically close as it used to be. And social control isn't as firm as it used to be when we knew one another in our communities. And the way we knew one another was really through our churches. I mean, sure, where you lived and all this and that, but the churches were, and the synagogues were the central place where people met. And, you know, if somebody was in trouble, you knew it in that church and you took care of them. And now, I mean, I'm sure it's the same thing if you're in a mosque, you know one another. But that has vitiated quite a bit. So we bump around a lot of times and we really don't see things. And sometimes, Tim, I think we don't see what we don't want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I can attest to that. When I was switching from a year in telecom to working with animals and communicating with them, et cetera, a lot of people could not deal with that. And some had to label it in a way they felt comfortable with. And others, it brought about a whole new group of individuals who loved and supported what I was doing. And so I think that's very apropos. You know, we turn our heads if we don't want to know about it, thinking that the less we know, the better we are off we're going to be.
Well, and also we won't be called to do anything.
That's right.
It's always bad.
Like Sergeant Schultz used to say, I know nothing, I see nothing. Hogan's Heroes. Boy, I'm really dating myself on this show.
No, you're not. I'm older than you are. So don't, really, you're in good shape.
There you go.
Actually, I love getting older. I have no complaints. I mean, it takes a little while to straighten up in the morning. I mean that. And even though I, you know, do stuff and I try to ride every day and that kind of stuff, you know, you've been around a long time and it's like the shoes, your feet hurt, you know.
That's
right.
You've
been standing on those feet for decades. But it's okay. It really is okay. And that's another thing that I play with in it, particularly this series, is we have this Irish wolfhound who's very young. He's, you know, maybe just a year to a couple months now. And the other animals around him are much older. And he's seeing everything for the first time, and they're such sweet animals. A lot of it he just doesn't understand, especially people. Like, he can't understand, why do they have shoes? Why are they walking on two legs? And the others try to explain it to him, and I do have fun with that, because I would think, and I actually think animals know a fair amount about us, but there have to be things about us that are just absolutely bizarre to them.
Yeah, I would say so. And I love the combination, you know, so we're talking about Feline Fatale. That's the name of the book. It's a, you know, a mystery, a death of a young Capitol employee. And we tie in all the political figures and introduce a lot of new figures in here, in characters, I should say, into the book. And then we have our feline, you know, Fatale, and we have all the other wonderful animals that help solve this mystery along with Harry.
Well, at the very end, the animals don't really solve it. I mean, they smell, they know something's going on, but they aren't quite sure of what it is. And it's at the very end, in one of the hallways of the Virginia House of Delegates, the hallway going down to the, what I would call the forum, but you know, the big room where you sit. Mm-hmm. They know something is happening, but they don't know how it got transmitted. So until one of the characters runs out the door to save his butt, they know something's wrong, but they don't know until the minute that guy runs out the door, and then they got it. And that was fun, too, because usually they'll figure things out ahead of time. But there was no way they or anybody else could really figure this out, even though it was right in front of their faces.
Well, as we say, always look to the animals. If you want to know the truth, if you want to notice what's going on around you, take a look at the animals, because you're right. We often don't know what's in front of us. Even our right foot in front of our left, we don't always know, no matter what shoes we wear.
I remember one of my friends one time, she was just so tired. She looked at her feet, and she couldn't remember the word left, so she said, my other right. I mean, it's funny. And she wasn't in drugs or drunk or anything. She was just dog tired, to use a phrase. But which brings me back to another thing about this book. One of the cats, of course, is Pewter, the fat gray cat who says she's not fat, gets behind the bookshelf because she's upset because she wasn't taken where she wanted to go. So at home, she gets behind the bookshelf and pushes all the books off that particular shelf, which I'm sure some of your listeners, their cats, have done it, which is just a really rotten thing to do. But what was also on that shelf was a picture of Harry's grandfather, who was in the Navy and was on a destroyer, and a picture of him on the ship. And fortunately, it's not broken, and she picks it up. And she looks at the picture, and she realizes she doesn't know that much about her grandfather's life, much as she loved him. And then she begins to wonder, would we do that today? Would we volunteer to save our country today like my grandfather did? Mm. So she gets herself, her mind going in directions that hasn't gone before. But it's a worthy question, and she doesn't even know what she would do. I mean, she didn't live through Pearl Harbor or any of that. I mean, yes, there was 9/11, but that's not really quite the same. That wasn't an attack from a recognized state. That was a terrorist attack, which is quite different, because you can't negotiate with terrorists, whereas you can negotiate with another state or go to war. But I had an interesting time with that, too, because I think, Tim, the further away we get, the more in danger we are.
Explain that to me.
Because people forget.
Okay, I see what you're saying now. Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. And the men would be working in the fields, the young men in their 20s or so, I would see shrapnel scars. Now, I didn't know what they were. I asked my mother, why does Uncle Kenny have all those scars on his back? And she would say, well, you know, he was in a foxhole and he lifted up a little bit and they got him. And it became real to me. And there were some other friends of my parents who were older. They were the World War One generation, pretty much, who were missing a limb or had, you know, some damage that you could see. And it, little by little, because you're a child, you don't know, but you begin to understand something terrible happened. And then as you get older, you study it, you learn about it. And I think now the young are so far away from that kind of damage and drama and sorrow, because so many died, they have no sense of it. So a bit of an uproar seems like the end of the world to them. And truthfully, it is the end of their world, because they've never seen anything.
Yep, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I think with our attention spans and going on right now, especially the way the world is, we tend to forget sooner than later. You know, even if there is a traumatic event going on within days, it's like nothing ever happened. You know, and it's not the fact that we pull our bootstraps up and move on. It's more the fact of, okay, well, what happened last week is done and dusted. So let's just not even worry about it.
No, I think the media is an extraordinary problem, and the stir stirs the pot. And the animals don't quite get that. I mean, because they're not, the news doesn't mean anything to them. You know, whereas Harry and her husband can get glued to the set about something, they don't understand it. they only respond to what's real and what they can see.
Yeah, that makes
so
sense.
So that also makes us different from animals. I mean, we can become very upset with something that's happening halfway around the world. And in some ways, that's good. We have empathy, we have concern. But in other ways, it just adds to this burden of fear. I mean, if it's halfway around the world, really, what can you do about it? But if it's down the block, there's a good chance you can do something.
There you go. Well, as always, try to live an animal's life. You know, live a dog's life and you'll be happy. That's what I say. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll come back and continue our conversation with Rita Mae Brown, talk about the book Feline Fatale, and also just talk about more about life in general. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's Talk Pets.
Let's Talk Pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with New York Times bestselling author Rita Mae Brown and her book Feline Fatale. Of course, it's part of the Mrs. Murphy Mysteries series. It's the 32nd book in the series. Now, Rita Mae, does that astonish you? Does that make your typing and writing fingers hurt? Or is it something in between?
It astonishes me. It does. I mean, I've got over 70-some books now out there, and we're not counting the screenplays, but just books. And I can't stop writing. I mean, clearly this is some kind of, I don't know what it is, but I just can't stop. And I love the research. I mean, that's part of what draws me on, just go nuts over research. And I check other people's research, too. Like, I'm reading Philippa Gregory's Normal Women, which is unbelievable. It's nonfiction. I've read all of her fiction and had the great joy of serving on a panel with her for the New York Times. So she reads Latin, of course, so do I. So a lot of what she's researched, I know because I've read it. And I mean, her research is impeccable. I am so overwhelmed with people that do a good job. Obviously, Churchill. I mean, that research was beyond compare. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he had his Latin and Greek, so he had no problem knowing where to go to get stuff. And he's in a country that has saved stuff from the time of Harold, who got the arrow in the eye. I mean, we've got papers even before that. We don't have that here. We have some things. But remember, after 1865, a lot of what was in the South was burned.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot we don't know. And that's interesting, too, when you try to do research or you go back a little bit in time. But a lot we don't know about genetics. I mean, yes, if you do 23andMe, you maybe can find out medically. But stuff you don't really know about your families. Harder for black Southerners than white, but it can be pretty hard for white, too, depending, because so many records got burned because of the fear that when the Yankees occupied us, they'd kill us. You know, we'd be traitors and we'd be killed, which is what the Brits planned to do in the Revolutionary War, which doesn't really get taught to us very much. But I look at all this and I think we're still so new. There's so much we don't know. And we focus on our little 250 years of history or whatever it is. And we think it's the center of the world, but it's really not. And like if you read about St. Hubert, if you read about people who lived and their attitude towards animals and how they helped us with animals, you realize why nobody in the Western world is ever going to eat dogs. No, really. I mean,
it's a good
point. It's a grotesque example, but it will never happen.
Because we know the history. We lived through that brief history.
No, because St. Hubert's told us never to do things like that.
Ah.
Never to be cruel to animals. Never to kill a pregnant animal if, you know, if she's healthy. Don't do it. You don't hunt an animal who's, you know, what we would say heavy. It's a part of our culture. And even back in ancient Greece, you know, yes, there were animal sacrifices for some gods and goddesses, but that was pretty much the limit of it. There wasn't so much cruelty focused on animals. There was some. I mean, our cruelty seems to be quite focused on one another.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
It's just odd. Being part of Western culture, it's truly a culture. It's not at all like Asian culture or Indian culture, which would be South Asia, I guess, but still very different from China. And it's not at all like African culture. I mean, we are distinct, but they are too. But I look at this, but one of the things that is most remarkable about Westerners, particularly those of us that speak English, is our deep love for animals. And they have it in Turkey, by the way. If you go to Istanbul, cats are everywhere. They love cats. And the Japanese love cats.
Yes.
So it's interesting where you find these pockets of real connection to other life forms. And I'm hoping it expands. You know, it's one of the great things I love about the environmental movement, which I don't really always focus on in my books because people don't really need me to preach to them, but how good it is for animals ultimately.
Yeah, and I see our love for animals, like you said, not only in the Western culture, but maybe perhaps our Western culture love of animals have bled over as those have wanted to move west or have spent time here, maybe did their university here, whatever it may be. The love affair and the culture has blended back over because I see that too. I see that a lot in people I know, different cultures, and people that are living in the area maybe for a short period of time and then go back home. They take that love affair for animals back with them, which I think is part of that blending and better understanding of what the true pleasure it is and the true education you can learn from the animals around you.
It's one of the great things about the time in which we are now. We have so many more opportunities than our grandparents or great-grandparents, unless they were very, very wealthy. They could take a ship. But we can really pretty much go anywhere. And what you learn, like the first time I was in Japan, I've been to Japan 3 times, I wound up in Kyoto, which I was overwhelmed with those shrines. You got to see it to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of years. But there was a dog tied to a pole, because I guess his mistress, it turned out to be a mistress because I waited for her, was in the shrine. And it's the first Shiba Inu I ever saw. I couldn't believe how beautiful it was. And the lady came out, and I spoke about 3 words in Japanese. You know? And her English was a bit better, obviously, because we'd been there since 45. And it was just a charming discussion with another animal lover. And that's when I determined I would bring one of these animals back, no matter what it took. But wherever you are, there are these moments where you connect with people over animals or their children or whatever, and you realize about the really great things in life, we're pretty much the same. Or
yes.
That's what I bring out of it.
And I agree, and I think animals are the great common denominator in that as well. You know, I think they bring us together. They help us sort of break down the barriers a little bit. And then once we have established that we all love animals, then that gives us an opportunity to understand that you're right, that we are all the same.
You know, it's interesting because my books are fairly much published everywhere, not in China, not in Russia, which should be no surprise, you know, or some of the Middle East countries. No, I'm not there. You know, I get fan mail or I'll meet people, and they want to talk about their animals. And Hungary, by the way, is very advanced. I mean, some of the research on dog cognition is way ahead of us from that remarkable country. But you realize, in many ways, we lead, but only on certain issues. Like, we're still trying to prove that animals have emotions. Don't laugh. There are still some people in the country that want it scientifically proven. It's like, do you have eyes?
Absolutely. Yeah, the fine line between the scientific mind and the, we'll say, the empathetic mind, the empathetic heart, the spiritual side of things. And you're absolutely right. They have emotions.
But you said spiritual, which got me going. Towards the end of the book, Mrs. Murphy realized that Amanda isn't happy. She doesn't know why, but the animal, she and Peter discuss this for a moment. Like, this is a woman who looks like she has everything, but she doesn't seem to be happy. So, you know, is it because of ambition? She wants to be the first woman governor in Virginia, which is not going to happen after her first term, that's for sure. But how they are able to sense where we really are, and we're able to cover it up. You've seen this, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
But I'm utterly fascinated by it, and I'm fascinated with these books, because I'm so in love with these characters. I mean, I've lived with them now for, what, close to, 35, 40-some years, so they really are in ways like my family. With my mother and my mom and dad really taught me to love animals. Mom was great with horses, because our whole one side of our family is all horse people. And horse people, like, back to when thoroughbreds first got imported into Virginia. But Mom loved cats, and I think I just learned from her, and I learned to be quiet and observe. And if you can do it with cats, you can do it with people.
That's it. I love it. So, Rena Mae, when everybody picks up a copy of Feline Fatale and they read through it, there's so much wonderful stuff in here and a little bit of, I call it a smorgasbord of little samplings in here wrapped around this great mystery. At the end of the day, what do you hope people gain from this book compared to the others, or just in general once they read through the book Feline Fatale?
Well, I hope in every book of mine, if you want to learn something, you can. Again, I'm not preaching, but if you want to learn something, you can. But mostly I want people to recognize their neighbors. I feel like each of my books is a party. You're invited to the party and you get to meet everybody. That's one of the reasons I don't go into this dense psychological detail. I want you to figure them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love it because the blend of each character is very unique, very interesting. The new characters that come into the book, and then you blend in the animals, and then you realize, for me at least, every time I read your books, I realize and know the research that went into it, so how the accuracy is there, but yet keeping the entertainment fact and having these little subtle messages that get you to think without, like you said, preaching to the masses.
People are overcommitted. They're tired. Inflation is knocking the poop out of us. I mean, they keep saying it's going away. I haven't seen it. I mean, yeah, it's a little better at the gas pump, but, I mean, people are tired. They're tired just trying to pay the same bills they could have paid fairly easily before COVID. You know, we'll never really know what COVID did to us. That's going to take a long time to figure out. So if I can give somebody a bit of an escape and make them laugh in the process, then I think I've been worth their time. And I'm worth their time. I'm not here to be the smartest person in the room. I'm not here to throw around my Greek and Latin, although sometimes I can't help it. I do inflict it on people. But I'm well educated for an American, and that education leads me to realize the whole purpose of writing is to communicate. It's to reach other people, not to sit there and tell them how damn smart you are.
Excellent. I love it. And you definitely do that each and every time. And this book is no exception to the rule. It's Feline Fatale. It's part of the Mrs. Murphy Mystery Series by, obviously, the great Rena Mae Brown. Rena Mae, always, always a pleasure. I can make it like a 20-part series, just sit here all night and chat with you about life.
Can I ask you a quick question before we end?
Absolutely.
Are you going to go buy your wife red high-heeled shoes?
Well, I've learned one thing. You got to keep the wife happy. So if she ever wants red high-heeled shoes, I will buy them for her. But I think she's more happy with a nice comfy pair of shoes and having as many critters and plants around her as possible. That's what makes her happy, and that's what I do each and every day.
Okay.
You got it. All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for the show, you can go to PetLifeRadio.com, and we will definitely answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows. That's at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.